Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, this is an audio-only recording of a call with a new potential client from Singapore who's already invested in other locations around the world, and he's now looking to expand to Japan, mainly for diversification purposes. So we talk about a huge range of topics all related to property investment market here, from basics like cash flow and potential growth, taxes, including income tax and various claimable deductions like purchase cost depreciation, withholding tax, property tax, and limitations on non-resident buyers, prices and yields in various locations, property profiles, advantages and disadvantages of each of those profiles as investment real estate, what is a good and or reasonable amount to invest and why, viewings and gauging the interior condition of tenanted properties, which is not that simple in Japan, tenant profiles, property management, reselling properties that are held, and much, much more. And then we also talk about our own services, how they work, how much they cost, and the ability to conduct the entire process remotely without having to visit Japan at any stage. So a really good, thorough conversation, which should be interesting for anyone considering investing here for the first time, and probably even for those already invested here to one degree or another. Enjoy the chat, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so let me just browse down through your email so I can refresh my memory. Or do you want to give me a background again?
Yeah, so basically I'm just looking at diversifying my portfolio of properties in Singapore and also in Malaysia. So I'm looking at Japan as a possible way to diversify as well. And thank you for your podcast. I've listened to a lot of the interviews that you have done.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
A little bit of a flavor of Japan, but I think nothing beats hearing from you personally, right? So maybe I just share my goal. I heard you talk about like the net yield in Japan or in certain areas that you mentioned could even go up to like 7 and 8%. I think that was interesting because in Singapore, we generally get about maybe 2 or 3%.
Yeah, I think, right? You might have been listening to some older episodes, because these days, if we get 7%, we're very happy. Normally, the top we'll see is 6, 6 and a bit.
Yeah. I see. No, 6 and a bit is still great. Right? It's still way better than
And obviously, that's not going to be central
Singapore,
Tokyo.
Kind of exchange that for capital gain.
Sorry?
Yeah. So yeah. No, I'm just saying in Singapore, mostly people are playing it for the capital gains strategy.
Yep.
Right? Whereas in Japan, it's kind of like the rental yield strategy, right?
Yep. Correct. So people here invest mainly for the cash flow.
Do you hear me clearly? Because I...
I can hear you perfectly.
Because I can't really hear you.
Really?
Hear me perfectly. Okay, great.
Right, hang on. Give me a second.
Just that moment, and it was a bit choppy.
Okay, no worries. So yeah, people invest here mainly for...
I think that was fine.
Yep, mainly for the cash flow and because of the hassle-free nature of the tenants and the professional companies that you work with and all of that.
I just want to ask regarding like foreigners when we were to buy in Japan as a form of investment, right?
Yep.
What are the taxes involved? Like, is there like specific tax that foreigners need to watch out for, or is it?
You're actually exempt from some of the municipal taxes because you're not a resident, but that's very small amounts in any case. So it's almost entirely identical to residents. There's also no legal limit on owning property. Everything is free. Almost everything is freehold. It's very rare that properties are not. There's no limit on foreigners purchasing properties. It's just practically on the ground. It's difficult for the Japanese entities to deal with foreigners because a lot of them have never done that before.
Right. Okay. And in terms of loans, I remember you mentioning that for foreigners it's almost impossible. Is that still the case in Japan?
Well, UOB actually in Singapore are now offering individual investment loans.
Right. Oh, okay. For Japanese properties.
For Japanese properties, but strictly for investment and only in Tokyo, Osaka, Fukuoka and Kyoto, as far as I remember.
Good enough for me, I guess.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
If you remind me, if you reply to our last email and remind me, I'll send you a copy of their product brochure.
All right. Thank you. Let me ask a bit more about the taxes, because that was something that when I search on the internet, I get very different answers. So,
okay,
is there an income tax on the rental?
There is. Once you get to 485,000 yen net per year, so after you've claimed all of your purchase costs, your management costs, if your portfolio is still generating beyond that in taxable income, that's when income tax kicks in. But it's quite low. It's 5%, I think, from memory, until you reach about 2 million yen a year, and then it goes to 10%.
Right. Oh, it's only 5%, because I saw on some website it says there's a withholding tax of like 20% or something.
Yeah, but withholding tax you get back when you file your taxes. It's not a real tax.
Oh, it's not a real tax. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it is a real tax in the sense that it's being charged, but next year when you file your income tax statement, then you get a refund for that.
Oh, so upfront you will give 20%, then later on they will return you, say, 15% of it.
In some cases, it really depends who the seller of the property is and who your tenant is. Commercial sellers and commercial tenants are a bit more aware of the law, because the onus, it's the one collecting the income from the foreigner that is mandated to report it and withhold the tax. So it's not like something that you have to do, it's something that they might be aware of and would therefore withhold it and report it to the tax department. So if you happen to buy a property from a real estate agency that owning and selling the property themselves, then they might charge that's a purchase. That's when you sell a property. Backtrack.
That's capital gains tax, right?
When you're selling a property and you're receiving an income from a Japanese commercial entity,
uh-huh,
that's when they might withhold the tax, and then you can claim it back from the tax department the next year once you file your taxes. And the same goes for tenants. If your tenant is a commercial entity, like sometimes you're going to have a company renting a property from you, then they are usually aware of the fact that they need to charge withholding tax because you're a non-resident landlord. In which case, they will withhold tax from the rental income, and again, when you file your taxes the next year, you'll claim that back.
Okay.
Withholding tax is basically designed to prevent foreigners from running off with the money without paying their taxes. As long as you're filing your taxes, it all comes back to you.
Right. Okay. So it really doesn't matter if I rent it to a private citizen or a company. It's just the way the tax is being collected.
Well, yes, except that, for example, let's say you just own two tiny properties and you're under the reporting threshold. So you wouldn't have to hire an accountant and file a tax return, but if somebody withheld tax from you, then you would have to hire an accountant and file a tax return just to get it back. So it could be a few hundred extra dollars a year that you'd have to pay just to get it back. But that's only for small portfolios. If you've got a portfolio of, you know, sufficient enough income that you're filing your taxes anyway, then no, it doesn't make a difference. I mean, it makes a difference in cash flow because you'll get it back a year later, but in the bottom line, no, it doesn't make...
Need an accountant anyway.
Correct.
Okay. For purchasing for foreigners purchasing property in Japan, I know you talk about like mostly apartments, and I think in fact in one of your episodes you mentioned that buying houses on land itself, it wasn't really recommended.
For investment, it's not recommended. If you're planning to do something else with the property, that's entirely a different matter. Yeah.
Right. Why is it not recommended for investment?
For two reasons. One is that houses in Japan are usually, unless it's a very custom-made house, but normally they're made from very flimsy materials.
Yeah.
They're not really built to last. So once they hit 20 or 25 years, maintenance costs rise significantly.
Right.
And the other reason is that Japan being Japan, the population being what it is, with families shrinking in size and most of them having, you know, one or two children at most, it's just easier to find single or couple with toddler tenants than it is to find a tenant who actually wants to rent a family-sized property.
Right. So they wouldn't rent like a 3DK, 4DK
kind of stuff. They do, but it's a lot easier and faster to find smaller footprint tenants, if you will.
Right.
But having said that, there are advantages to having a family tenant because they stay longer and they take better care of the property compared to some of the singles, especially if you've got like an old destitute man who just sits there and smokes all day, which often happens in Japan. Then the property is not going to be in very good condition once they move out or pass away. Whereas with families, they tend to take better care of a property.
Right.
And they stay longer. Your typical single or couple will stay in place an average of somewhere between 4 to 5 years. Families usually 8, 10, even more.
Okay. Because for me, I come from the background whereby whenever we talk about buying property, if you can buy a land, then it's a lot more valuable because at the end of the day, you can kind of renovate the place or even rebuild the house. Would that be something that you would
That's
for investment?
Yeah, that's true in Japan as well. But most of our customers, to be honest, are not really looking for mental bandwidth consuming creative strategies of being flexible with the types of rentals and constructing and demolishing that. They're looking for something that's turnkey and they can collect the income easily and smoothly every month. So that factor usually doesn't give them much of an advantage. But I would definitely say if your budget can allow it, I would get definitely a landed property, but maybe a small building, a multi-unit building, rather than a house with a single income stream. You'll have 4 or 6 or 8 different units that are generating income streams, right? And they're a lot cheaper than most people think in Japan. They start at about 35, 40 million yen.
A whole building?
A whole building.
35 million.
Correct.
That's
like a one-bedroom apartment in Singapore, I know.
That's 350 US dollars. 350K, sorry. 350K.
33, at current rates, it's even crazier. It's about 300,000 starts in.
Yeah, 300,000. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, not all cities, not all okay. Like, for example, Fukuoka City, which is very popular, usually starts at, 45, 50. Osaka, similar, Nagoya, maybe a bit lower. Yokohama, we can find something 30, 35, maybe 40. To be on the safe side, let's call it 40 million plus. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's akiya-mart, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Right. Would in terms of like investment return, would you suggest we are looking more at like the major cities or going further out into the outskirts?
Aside from Tokyo and central Osaka, I would go for a major, more stable city, not for the investment yields, because investment yields will be higher, or at least will be higher on paper when you start. They will be higher in smaller towns, but better locations, number one, tend to hold the value of the property a little bit better. And the tenant base is a lot bigger and more robust. Whereas with smaller townships, I mean, we'll obviously try to point you in the right direction. We're not going to go for a town that's fast declining in population. But even if it's got stable population, the tenant base is smaller and in many cases a lot older too. Which just creates, I mean, it's still Japan. It's not going to be a horrible disaster. But it's, again, requires more mental bandwidth. You occasionally, I mean, the less central the property is and the older it is, the more that you have rent wars starting. So whenever you have a vacancy, you have to check how many newer buildings are offering similar rents, and then you have to reduce your rent. So it kind of becomes a bit of a race to the bottom. Whereas if you're investing in a safe and stable and central location in a larger city, your yield would be lower, but it would hold that yield a lot better over time. It doesn't fluctuate as much.
I see. So for large cities, what kind of view are we looking at, like compared to, let's say, the rural part of the country?
It's probably the difference between 4.5% to 5.5%, whereas with smaller townships, we'd get 6 to 7 if we're lucky.
Okay.
If it's Tokyo, though, it's more like Singapore, like 2-3, 3 and a bit percent.
2-3.
Central Osaka, similar, maybe 4% if you're lucky.
Mm.
But suburban Osaka, Kobe, Yokohama is Japan's second biggest city, for example, and yields are still very high there.
Yeah. I have a weird question. I don't know whether it makes sense, right? Because I keep hearing this thing about Japan being the property doesn't appreciate, right? It kind of just stays the same price for the last...
The structures don't appreciate. Land in central areas definitely...
So apparently, like before COVID, the prices had kind of stayed stagnant for quite a long time.
Not really. They started. They hit bottom at the end of 2012, and since 2013, they definitely have been rising in all major cities. The only outlier is Nagoya, where COVID definitely took a hit, so prices there are lower at the moment. But all of the other big cities have definitely been. Tokyo is past where it's been pre-bubble days.
Exactly. So I'll.
And you know, it's not like structures actually appreciate in other countries. It's always just the land. A building is not worth more as it gets older.
Yeah. So would that hamper or change your decision between investing in apartments versus buying a property with land?
Well, first of all, apartments do come with land. They come with a portion of the land. So if it's chopped up between all unit owners, but they do gain in value when the location does well. The bigger the land, obviously, the more you stand to gain if and when things improve. But then we're going back to the speculative discussion. Japan has been doing all right in the last 10 years, but 25 years before that, it was deflationary, right? So we... Personally, I mean, if you twist our arm, we'll buy whatever you tell us to, but we personally would prefer to direct our customers to focus more on cash flow than potential growth.
Right. So if any growth or capital gains is like a bonus rather than something you should expect.
Exactly. And you can invest in cities that have been doing well when the economy does well. So, for example, instead of Tokyo or Osaka, you invest in Kobe or Fukuoka. Those are still locations that do very well when the economy does well, but they're not inflated like Tokyo and Osaka.
I love Fukuoka. When I visit, I always find Fukuoka as a better place to stay, not so crowded, and the prices are not so high as well.
It's definitely the best city I've lived in. I'm biased.
you're still in Fukuoka right now, right?
Yeah. We've been here for 11 years now.
Right. Okay. So I wanted to ask regarding the service that you provide. Because for myself, like you say, I don't think I want something that takes up a lot of brain space. So, I read your document briefly before our call. I apologize.
Right.
So in terms of like working with the agent, or even like receiving the rental. Is there anything that you are not providing within your service that the investors have to do it ourselves?
Well, we're not accountants, so we'll put you in touch with an accountant and we can provide the accountant with all the documentation that they need to do their work, but we're not going to be the ones doing that. That's a separate payment. If you need any legal litigations, court evictions, there might be lawyer fees involved, just stuff that we're not certified to do. For other things that are not directly related to property, but customers sometimes ask us for, I've recently established another company, so there's stuff that we'll be able to do even if it's not directly related to property, just not under NTI, it'll be under a different company. But anything related to, I mean, we're not the ones doing the property management ourselves. We utilize third-party property managers, so that's a separate charge, and we are not the real estate agent, we work with real estate agent. So really all of our work is sourced through third parties. We're just a single point of contact in English for the customer.
Right, I understand.
But there's a bunch, I mean, there's building management companies, renovation companies, property managers, real estate agent, insurance, tax, I mean, all of the third parties, we channel it for you, but we're not the ones doing it ourselves.
Right, I understand. So with all the other third parties like property management, I'm just thinking about the ongoing cost, right? So the property management, the agent fee, roughly how many percent of the rent it would be?
So
it will add up to
Are we talking about the purchase or the ongoing management? Which one?
Maybe both.
Okay, well, so for purchase, it varies depending on the price of the property. The pricier it is, the less it ends up being percentage-wise. So assume something between, let's say, 10 to 13% for those small buildings, or let's say for anything above 20, 25 million yen.
Less than 25 million yen.
Above, yeah. And then
above.
And then the percentage goes up as you go down in price. So for example, the cheapest properties could come with 20 or even a bit more percent purchase costs.
20, okay, right.
The cheapest properties. And then once you reach about 10 million yen, it becomes something like 17, 18%. And again, all the way down to 10, 13 or so.
Okay.
And that's composed of the realtor fee, which is, again, varies depending on the price, but somewhere between 3 to 5%. Our fee, which is 3 to 5%. The purchase tax, which is varies again, but between 1.5 to 2.5%, and legal and registration, which is normally between 1 to 4%. And again, the higher the price, the lower the percentage it'll be.
Okay, got it. All right.
And for management,
Management.
So if you're buying a condo unit, building fees can vary a lot. So depending on how old and how fancy the building is, it could be anywhere from 30% to 50% of the gross rental income.
Wow.
I mean, a luxury property, for example, might net you, I don't know, $2,000, $2,500 a month, but you'll be paying $500 a month in building fees, right?
Wow.
For instance. But the cheaper, older properties, which are usually the cash cows, that would normally be somewhere between 10 to 20% for building fees.
Okay.
Property managers charge 4 or 5%, depending on location, depending on whether it's a single unit or a building.
4 or 5%,
okay. We charge essentially 2% at some level, but we do have a minimum of 3,000 yen or so. And then insurance is peanuts in Japan. It's 10, 20 bucks a month or something like that for most units, for most properties. And that's
so
it.
Insurance is to insure the tenant?
The tenant insures themselves.
The tenants
take out their own policy for their physical well-being and their belongings. We are insuring the interior of the property in case of a condo unit or the entire structure in case of a standalone property.
So if let's say we were looking at around like 500K to 600K, how would you propose for an investor to invest in Japan? Would it be
US?
Many of the small caps? Yes, US dollars. Many of the small cash cow that you mentioned, or I've heard in some of your podcasts whereby you say just buy like a few, maybe it's like close to 200K each. range. So maybe three of those.
For 500k, that's already good enough to purchase a building. I would definitely advise that, because yeah, because then again, you get the larger land plot and you get the flexibility of being able to do not everything, but almost everything you want with it down the track. You're not going
to
be
a lot of hassle to just to manage a building, or
no? The property managers do their job well. It wouldn't be managing four doors in the same building or four separate doors all over the country. I mean, it's a hassle for us, actually, with the smaller ones, because we have to deal with different property managers. But from your perspective, it's not going to be a different. I mean, there are more unexpected things with the building, because there's nobody collecting reserve funds and taking care of the structure. Then everything that happens to the building, everything that needs to be done is on you. So financially, it can be a little bit less stable on an ongoing basis, because you suddenly have to do the roof, or you suddenly have to clean up the exterior, or stuff that you just don't need to think about with a condo unit, right? But otherwise, it's definitely not more of a hassle, and you get the flexibility. So if you can be disciplined enough to put, let's say, I don't know, 10% of your income aside, then that should cover any repairs or renovations that you'll need to do.
I have a friend who is also interested. I mean, I'm just asking as well. How about, let's say, like a lower budget, let's say, maybe just like 100K to start with, right?
That's one investment unit, or two if you want to go really, I mean, it's Japan, it's not ghetto, but really low income, small town, then maybe two investment units.
Yeah. Would those be hard to resell in the future?
Like, no, it's a very liquid market. Units?
It's a very liquid market.
It's the world's second biggest market, second only to the US. So if the property is priced properly, we've never had them stand on the market for more than 2-3 months.
Right. Okay. So even if it's a what would be the smallest quantum be, like 50K?
Yeah, I mean, we can, and we sometimes get asked to find cheaper ones. So if you insist, we will. But I would feel a lot more comfortable starting at around 50K, because that's when the unit profile becomes a little bit better. And that also means a better tenant profile.
Right. Okay. Understood. So better tenant
I mean, again, it's Japan. They're not going to be deadbeats and criminals and run drug labs or damage the property intentionally. But still, they could be destitute pensioners with nobody to take care of them. They could be entry level, shift workers, convenience store workers, people that could occasionally have some payment issues, not as much as in other countries, but still.
Okay.
And higher turnover as well.
So above 50K would be like a sweet spot to start with. Can I say that?
Would be the place to start. The sweet spot, would be closer to 10 million, yeah. So closer to 100,000.
Okay, 100,000 would be the sweet spot. Okay.
I mean, for cash flow, if you want safe and stable and you don't mind the lower yield, then, you know, bigger and more pricey is better, because, again, it's more, you're going to attract tenants that are going to have less issues. That's all.
Right.
But then yield does tend to drop quite significantly above about 10-12 million.
I see. In terms of capital gains, do you think such properties like the 50K and the 100K properties will ever appreciate, or is really just a cash cow strategy?
Our customers have gained some when they sold these properties if they're very centrally located. So, for example, one of the oldest building that we still manage, just because we helped customers purchase there when we started, so about 12 years ago. We wouldn't touch it now because it's getting close to 50 years old. I think it just passed 50 years old. So one of those buildings, when we started working, which is about 12 years ago, units were selling in that building for about 15,000 US. And now it's more like 40,000-50,000. So people who have, but that's in the heart of Fukuoka, right next to Hakata Station, Canal City.
Did you find something so cheap?
Not anymore, I can't, no.
Not anymore. No, but you're saying right now they're selling at 40K, 50K, right? Do you think?
Last time I checked, that was a few years ago. It's probably a bit more,
Okay, I mean, you still can find, those are one bedroom apartment, I assume.
That one in particular is more like a closet. It's 12 square meters.
It's a closet.
Not even a balcony.
And these are no issue if you want to resell it.
No issue to resell, and not even an issue to find a tenant. We never had it stand vacant for more than a month, because there's always people who want to live in that spot, regardless of the size of the property or how old it is. And the building, because this is, I mean, when you think about a building like that in Japan, you can imagine that nobody who can afford to buy these units will ever want to live in them, obviously. I mean, you wouldn't, right? And then anybody who can afford to live in them is never going to have the money to buy them. So they're strictly investment properties. Oh, yeah. Anybody who buys and sells them know that they're buying and selling an investment property.
Yeah,
and that means that they are priced, regardless of market fundamentals, they're only priced on the rental yield that they get, right? So as long as that's coming in, and as long as Fukuoka is popular and people realize that prices are getting higher, then there will always be a renter and there will always be a buyer. But having said that, 50 years is definitely way beyond our comfort zone. We wouldn't recommend for anyone to buy anything younger than 30 at the time of purchase. Anything older than 30, sorry.
What happens to this apartment when they hit like 50 years? Do they get torn down, or does the government like repossess them? Or, I mean, in Singapore, sometimes it does happen. Like the government will repossess very old homes and it just compensate you a sum of money.
Not here, or at least it hasn't happened to us or anyone that I know. Normally what happens is far before the building reaches that age where somebody will want to buy it or repossess it, the owner, because again, they're investment properties, so the owner union is always, each and every unit owner is always thinking about the return. As building fees get higher, because when a building reaches, say, 40 years of age, that's when maintenance really starts kicking in. And yield keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. So the owner union will normally vote to sell the entire building far before it even becomes an issue of forced eviction or forced reselling or anything.
Oh, they'll sell the whole building off.
Yeah, and they only need 80% agreement to pull off the sale. So usually as the building gets older, everybody kind of agrees that it's time to sell it.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
I see. But who will buy? I mean, I'm just curious, who will be buying those?
Developers.
Developers,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah. It depends on... So, for example, just to go back to that same example, the building that I was describing... it's huge in Japanese standards, so about, I think, 250 units, 250 rooms.
Wow.
And it's sitting smack in the middle of Hakata, and it's 50 years old. So as you can imagine, zoning regulations have changed very significantly since it was built. Mm-hmm. So a developer who's buying this now will never be able to build another 250 units on it, right? They're going to be bound by current zoning regulations, which might cut the size and the profit in half. So... it's never going to be an attractive prospect. You're not going to be doubling or tripling your money if you sell to a developer, but you will at least get your money back in most cases.
Okay, so it's kind of like your downside is protected still, right?
To a point, if it's in a good location, definitely. But if you're buying out in the sticks, then you might not have a buyer, right? So we would normally, again, when we work with an investor and it's not a lifestyle choice, it's a financial choice, then we would definitely be directing them towards locations where that can be avoided.
Right. Okay. So for someone like me who is just starting out, actually, which area would you recommend that I invest in right now?
At what budget?
Let's say we start with, you were saying 150. 100k at least, right?
Yeah. Maybe 100k. Well, the only place where 100k won't buy you a super attractive property is maybe central Tokyo. So I think any of the big cities are still very much in play at that budget. I would probably direct you to suburban Osaka or Kobe, Fukuoka City, Chiba City if we want to stay around Tokyo, Saitama City. Central or at least not too suburban Yokohama, because Yokohama is a huge city, but beyond the 4 or 5 stations around the port, it gets very rural.
I see.
But definitely central Yokohama, Kawasaki, if we manage to find something there, but it's very similar to Tokyo fundamentals, so not very often. Maybe Kyoto if we find something, but there's not that many investment properties in Kyoto. It's mostly old houses, unless you want to run Airbnbs and stuff.
Yeah. It's mainly tourism, right?
Yeah.
Also, 100k, you still can get suburban in Tokyo.
You can get suburban in Tokyo, but much older and much smaller than you get in other cities. So I probably, unless we happen to hit pay dirt, I probably have try not to look too hard at Tokyo for that budget.
I see. Okay. All right. Got it. I have one question about the tax deductible that you mentioned in one of the videos. You were mentioning like it runs out in 3 years or something like that, or 5 years.
Not all tax deductions. So the depreciation of the property itself, you can carry forward until it depreciates completely, which for concrete is 47 years.
Right.
But the claiming of the purchase costs, let's put it this way, the claiming of a loss, a total loss in income, so adding up the purchase costs versus the rental income minus the management costs. So for the first 1 to 3 years, you're going to be operating at a loss on paper. That loss can only be carried forward 3 years as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you can't claim that anymore, only the depreciation of the structure itself.
Right.
Or 5 or 6 years if you're buying under a corporate structure.
Right. But for foreigners, it's a lot harder to set up a corporate structure, right?
Oh, it's not hard at all, but it costs money. And it costs money on an annual basis to keep it alive as well. You can also purchase under a foreign corporation name. That's not a problem. That slightly reduces the annual upkeep because there's no minimum corporate tax like there would be. So maybe instead of like $3,000 or $4,000 US a year in company upkeep, it'll be more like $2,000-$3,000 a year.
Okay.
But again, you want to make sure that you're getting enough rental income to cover those upkeep costs, right? So it's usually not worth it for purchases that are less than, let's say, $500,000-$600,000 US.
I see.
Or total asset value. It doesn't have to be
asset value.
Yeah.
Right. Also, after the 3rd year, any like ongoing expenses, you can't claim that as a tax.
Oh, no, ongoing management expenses you always claim.
Right.
Because that's all concluded within the single year, right? It's not a huge amount like purchase expenses. And depreciation, again, you claim until the life cycle of the depreciation ends for that property.
Right. So the purchase expenses are what again?
Let's say worst case for cheaper properties, 20%. If you're talking about 100K, probably more like 16 to 18%.
So you will just claim that full amount across 3 years. Right?
Correct.
Spread out across.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So if your property, for example, let's say conservatively, a property might be yielding you, let's say 5% a year, but you've got 15% to claim. So those first 3 years are covered, right?
Right. I see. So, but why would that make me want to sell after the first 3 years or something? redo the purchase cost, is it?
So we do have customers that do that. They recycle their properties every 3 or 5 or 6 years just so that they can start the claiming cycle again.
Does it make sense? I'm just thinking in my head.
Well, I mean, if you can't claim as much as you could, then you would sell the property. But I mean, if you sell the property and you get an income, you'd be paying income tax on that income as well. So that's something that's a little bit over my pay grade. That's more of an accountant conversation. But we do have customers that recycle through properties, not just for tax purposes, but also, again, as the property gets older, building fees get higher, the yield shrinks, it's time to recycle, right?
Okay. So would it, I mean, because it's kind of like a cash cow game, right? Would you recommend some recommend me to like hold on to a property for extended period? Or is there like the sweet spot whereby after how many years it's best to kind of recycle the asset?
With close to that 40-year mark is the time to consider selling it.
Right. Okay. Closer to the 40-year.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Got it.
Just because, again, you want to avoid shrinking yields, and also other investors who will be buying the property from you have the same sort of calculation in mind, so they'll want to see a lower price. And also, that's when the aggressive developers start sniffing and swooping in and trying to buy it off the owners cheaply. So to avoid that situation, we recommend to customers to buy up to 30 years on purchase, and then within
within
6-7 years or up to 10 years consider selling it again.
Right.
But I mean, look, some of them are really such good income drivers that many owners just don't mind riding it till it drops kind of thing, and then just getting rid of it for whatever peanuts they can, because it more than paid for itself in, let's say, the 20 years that they've been holding it, right?
One thing about the rent I wanted to check with you, you were saying that it's almost impossible to raise rent in Japan, is that correct?
Has been to date, yes, in our experience, except very, very central locations, and even then only by 10, 20 bucks a month, not more.
Even, let's say, if you change the tenant, or like, let's say the tenant leaves...
Yeah, often when you change the tenant, you'll actually be reducing the rent, because number one, you might have a tenant who moved in bubble days and they don't like to negotiate rent in Japan. That's considered conflict, so they just keep paying it. But actually, based on current salaries and current cost of living, you should be charging a lot less. And also, the building gets older, there's more competition from newer buildings in the area. So again, a race to the bottom with the rent kind of starts. You definitely are not raising the rent in the vast majority of cases.
Wow. Okay. And that's why as the prices goes up, the yield starts to drop for many years.
Correct. Yeah. Because the purchase price goes up, but the rent only goes up slightly at best, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Wow, that's interesting. Because in Singapore, the rent has gone up even more than the price has gone up.
I wish we could do that.
But still, we are at 3.5% in Singapore. So
yeah.
And that's like your best case scenario.
Well, I mean, you're in the same boat. I mean, the numbers are bigger, but it's still, the rents are going up, yes, but the purchase price is really going up in Singapore, right? Similar to Hong Kong.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
My Zoom is the free version. So in 2.5 minutes, if it runs out, we'll just jump back in again.
Oh, yeah. No worries. Actually, I think I've got pretty much what I wanted to ask. Maybe just the last thing. If I were to purchase a property with you or your company, do I need to make a trip down to Japan?
Nope. I mean,
or even the purchase. Even
no,
the purchase,
no, we do. You give us a limited power of attorney document so that we can do all of everything on your behalf. There's two documents that you'll need to execute when you hire us, and two more documents that you'll need to execute per ownership transfer. But you get those done with the notary public and you post them to us.
I see. Okay.
But it's always a good idea to come and look at areas where you've purchased or are going to purchase. Definitely advise it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still. I'm okay to not look at it, so long as it makes sense, right?
I'm with you. I'm just work off Excel sheets, but people do like to walk around the building and say, yeah, that's... I mean, you can't enter a tenanted property in Japan. Tenancy laws prohibit that, so you're not going to be able to look inside, but at least you can walk around the building and know that it's yours, kind of thing, right?
I see. How do I receive rent? I tried to open a bank account in Japan and
no, you can't.
Yeah, yeah. So
So, as part of our monthly management service, we collect your rental income, pay your expenses. We give you an annual statement of account, so you'll know how much you've got accrued. Even if it's throughout the year when we haven't issued the statement, we can give you a rough approximation at least. And then whenever you instruct us to, we just send funds to you.
Okay.
But you want to sign up with OFX or Wise or one of those guys, because don't let your bank exchange your yens to dollars. They'll rip you off.
I do use Wise as well.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Just bear in mind that Wise, I think, are limited to 1 million transfers. So when you're transferring the 100,000 over for the purchase, it's better to use OFX or another company that doesn't have that limit. Yeah. If you remind me, I'll send you a referral link for OFX. I'm with them and with Wise, so you can get bonuses whichever you sign up with.
Yeah, please do. Okay. So I wanted to ask regarding the budget. So for the apartment, you're looking at about 100K. So that's about 10. That's 10 million yen, right?
Yeah.
I got the conversion correct. So how about if you're looking at buying a small house on a land, what would a recommended budget be?
Well, to make sure it's livable and comfortable and doesn't require too much work right after purchase, I'd probably, again, look towards around 10 million or so.
10 million as well.
Yeah, but that's, again, not the best investment, yeah?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Not the best in terms of you or in terms of growth?
Not the best in terms of unexpected maintenance costs and longer vacancies.
Okay, longer vacancies and maintenance. Okay, how much would the maintenance cost be for houses? Like just have a rough idea.
We normally evaluate something like $2,000 to $3,000 a year between, let's say, 25 to 35, 40 years old. And then maybe
$3,000.
Yeah, and then maybe $3,000 to $4,000 a year beyond that.
Right.
That can get a lot higher if it's a traditional built home, like last century, and not last century anymore, the century before. I mean, those are bigger and sturdier and much better building materials, but they require very specific craftsmen to maintain anything on them.
Right.
Now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our JREP sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area, so Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small-scale projects as well as full house renovations, and they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's ARKReform, all one word, .com, and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
When you buy over apartments or homes, is it likely that there will be some kind of renovation needed, like just to refurbish the place to ready for rental?
So when you're buying a vacant property, that's usually going to be after a renovation.
Oh, they would have renovated it already.
Normally, they would be sold renovated unless it's like a really... Wow. Like a really cheap bargain deal that somebody just wants to get rid of. We sold a few units unrenovated, but mostly we'd renovate them before we sell them just to get a better price and more interest. If you're buying tenanted, then it's obviously, again, nobody can enter a tenanted unit to inspect it. So we're going off what we assume is the condition, and we can sort of assess that based on the length of the tenancy and the tenant profile. So again, if it's an older man who's been living there for 15 years, we know there's going to be a very big renovation bill. And if it's a young couple who just moved in 2 years ago, now have a baby and move out, that's probably going to be light. Yeah.
I see. Do you have contacts or any recommended contractors that can help with that? Like if there's a renovation is needed?
We do in each particular city. It's not the same company, but yeah, in each city we work with different companies. A lot of the time it'll be, if we have a good property manager in that city, then they would have good recommended companies that they regularly work with. If we don't like the prices, then we'll just get a second opinion and make them work with somebody else, same as you do anywhere.
Right. Okay. So the renovation will be managed by you or the property management company?
By the property management company, but with us keeping a very close eye on the proceedings.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of our work, again, it's Japan, so there's no criminal practices involved, but a lot of our work does involve recognizing that a particular property manager is not doing a very good job and looking for a new one. We do that on a regular basis.
I understand. Yeah. Because the only concern I have is like the price of renovation could vary very widely between different parties, right?
So you can generally assume the average is something like 50,000 to 70,000 yen per year of tenancy.
Right.
Assuming it's one of those smaller single bedroom or one bedroom plus living, dining, kitchen kind of apartments, the bigger it is, the more it's going to cost, but it doesn't double by the number of rooms. It's, let's say, 50% for each extra room or so forth.
Okay, understood. Okay.
So when you're, again, when you had an older gentleman living there for 15 years, you can assume something like, let's say, 20,000, 30,000 renovation.
Right, okay. I understand if we were to continue, basically is to sign the contract of service and also the limited power of attorney, right?
Correct. Yes. And we also need, for your first purchase, we'll also need our fee estimate paid in advance. From the second purchase and onwards, we can just charge you after settlement. It's only for the first.
Okay. Got it. I am currently making a trip to Japan on the 18th, actually. So I was wondering if...
This month?
Yeah, this month. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Are you passing through Fukuoka?
Unfortunately not.
No.
It's only in around the Tokyo area. But if my time allows, I can try to make a trip down. Would it be possible to arrange to see or what are the areas that I could go and have a look for potential investments? Would it be possible?
So to recommend areas, we can definitely help you with that, and you can just... take a walk. But I mean, most of Tokyo is not a bad place to invest. If you want to look at particular properties, then we will definitely need some preparation time. How long are you staying for?
Just a week.
We normally ask people to give us about a month's notice. We can try to squeeze it within 2-3 weeks, but I can't make any promises. It depends on how available the listing agents are, how available our staff is, and in between those...
I may not have to see this round. I'm just exploring the idea since I'm going there.
But what we can definitely do is we can provide some... Because again, if you're looking at tenanted properties, which is what most of our customers normally go for...
I can't go in anyway, right?
So you can't go in anyway. So we can give you a list of attractive properties that we think, at least on paper, look like they might be a good investment, and you can have a look at the building.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, definitely.
Then you don't need anyone to liaise with. You just go and have a look.
Yeah, because I will be at the Tokyo Yokohama area. I mean, one of the meetings is at Yokohama, so I will be there. I think the team wanted to organize a trip to Chiba. I'm not sure what's there, but...
What do you do for work, by the way?
We are in a management company, so we do finance management.
Okay.
So it's like a company trip. It's managed by another team. I'm just tagging along.
Okay. Well, some of the agents, when they list properties online, they don't put in the full address because they're scared that another agent will steal the listing from them if they know exactly where the building is. But they're usually within a couple of blocks area. So just walking around, you should be able to spot the building based on the photos in any case.
Got it. Okay, cool. So let me discuss with my wife. Then if I want to engage you guys, so basically it's the two documents and also the fee estimate, right?
Yeah, but if you just want us to put in a couple of hours of research and give you a bunch of properties that you can go have and look at, we don't charge for that.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I really appreciate it.
That's not a problem. We can do that anytime before you engage us. If you want to go beyond that two-hour research, start making offers, contacting listing sellers and so forth, then we need to be engaged.
Yeah, I think the main thing that I'm looking at is... Because I don't speak the language, so it's great that you could help us to kind of do a lot of translation and the link up, and the negotiation. Even though I think in Japan, negotiation is not really something that people do, right? So
not much, no.
Not much, yeah. But whatever there is, right? I mean, if we can get a slight discount, that's great as well.
Sure, that's not a problem. We're always happy to do that.
Okay, all right. Then, please let me know what the listing that I can go and take a look. Then I'll hop over to have a look in when I'm in Japan. And if I can go down to Fukuoka, I would love to, you know, meet you as well.
That'd be great. But I'm going to be jumping straight into another meeting. So could you just email me, because I'm going to completely forget by the time I'm done with the second meeting. Just email me with a reminder to do that research for you and I'll send it your way.
I will. Definitely.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
My pleasure. Speak to you soon.
Alright, speak to you soon. Bye.
So there you have it. Kind of a Japan real estate property investment 101 session. I hope you found some value in it. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.